everyone. Welcome to our newest episode of There Are Four Hosts. As always, there are four hosts. I'm Sabrina. You can find me at Void Cat Gaming on Twitch, Twitter, or Instagram.
And I'm Michael. You can find me at Blue Beetle Games on Twitter.
I'm Jonathan. You can find me at Just Average J pretty much everywhere on the internet and socials.
I'm Keith Justice. You can find me on Twitter at Keith Hayward. And it is my genuine honor to introduce Melinda Snodgrass. Oh my God. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for asking me. I'm really excited. It's so nice to get to talk about the things we love with friends, especially when we're all social distancing. So thank you for including
Absolutely.
Before we start, is there anything right now that you're geeking out about a lot? This is Keith's question, by the way.
Yes.
Any show that you love right now that's really got your attention, a book you're reading?
I'm loving Westworld. I think Jonah is doing an amazing job with it. And I'm loving the Clone Wars. I watched the latest episode. Oh, so dark, so heartbreaking. And then periodically, just to make myself happy, I go and rewatch episodes of Rebels that have Agent Kallus in them. So, so that's what I'm doing. I was heartbroken that the Magicians ended their run. I loved that show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but, I just want to lean in and give you a fist bump on that Clone Wars and Rebels stuff there. And did you hear the news that every Clone Wars fan is going, oh my God, about where that incredible duel at the end of that last episode was motion captured with Ray Park?
No, I didn't know that, but it was wonderful. So,
that's exciting. Maybe I have to watch the show now. We will talk a lot about Star Wars at the end of this. but first, let's cover some basics about writing. Jay, you had a couple of writing questions?
Well, yeah. So, basically, I'm one of those people that just since we have a writer on the show, I was like, who better to ask, you know? So, I'm one of those people that's kind of a dreamer, but it's hard for me to put pen to paper, you know, if that makes sense. So like, how does someone who is a professional writer actually get over blocks or get over the initial getting it out
terror?
Yeah, like it's really you know, as someone who has issues just putting pen to paper and getting ideas out, it's just I've always wondered, like, how does a professional, you know, go about it and just get that idea out there to become this amazing thing?
Well, for me, my friend George Martin and I debate this constantly. He calls himself a gardener, which is another way of saying a pantser.
Yep.
And he says, I'm an architect, and I am an architect. I outline. And so when I get a notion, I get an idea, as you said, a dream that's, and I think, oh, that's a cool story. The first thing I try to figure out is what is the end? What is the ending of that book? And if I can't figure that out, I put it aside because clearly it hasn't cooked enough. If I can see what it's going to be, and usually it comes up because characters occur to me in a situation and I wonder how they got in that situation. And then I wonder, okay, but how do I resolve it? And so I always start at the back, at the end of the project. And that is also how we work in Hollywood, but you know, I can talk more about that too. So the first thing I do when I'm outlining on a whiteboard or preferably using 3x5 cards on a cork board, I lay out the acts. I have a teaser and generally three acts or four acts. And then I go to the end of act four and I write down how this ends. What is the end of this story? And then I go and figure out what the teaser is, the thing that makes somebody pick it up off the shelf and say, I would rather buy this book than a six pack of beer, as Robert Heinlein used to say, and figure that out. And then I figure out what the end of the rest of the acts are, because if you know where you're going, it's very easy to figure out the steps you need to get there. For sure. And so I think the mistake is that people start at the beginning and it just looks like this huge mountain they have to climb. And this huge mountain feels very intimidating. And if you can break it up into discrete moments, scenes, acts, aiming towards something, it starts to feel a lot less daunting. And so that's my general advice is figure out a roadmap for yourself. and know that you don't have to drive across country in one sitting. You know, this is it's a marathon, not a sprint, you know.
It's amazing.
Plan your pit stops.
Thank you. That's amazing. It's so cool to like have someone who does it just be able to answer that question. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I teach a lot of writing courses. So.
I love hearing about the process of writing so much. So yeah, I'm just like cheesing over here. Thank you.
Let me cut in with a question about that. How do you deal with influx of imposter syndrome, unless that's the thing that doesn't happen to you?
Oh, it happens to me. It always happens to me in the beginning. You know how a dog will circle their bed before they lie down? It's like, yep. I don't know. That's what I do before I have to start a new project. I wander around my office and I circle the chair in terror and I gaze at the computer balefully and go, I hate you. Yeah, and I'm like, because that first blank page, and I know in my heart that this is the book or this is the screenplay that will absolutely prove I have no talent. And I've been faking it the entire time.
Right.
And then mercifully, I usually have a contract. And also I was trained as a lawyer, so I have this sort of must do the work kind of thing that they drilled into me.
That helps.
It helps. So I go, well, there's nothing for it. If I'm exposed, I'm exposed. I just have to sit down. And if I can get that first sentence out, even just that much, I feel okay. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, that blank page and that terror that I feel is very real. And I think if you ever lose that, then you're not trying to get better with every project. Cool. And that's always a danger for writers. I think you have to say there's always something more to learn.
Writing is a hobby of mine, but I personally was trained as an actor. And a similar thing, like if you're not anxious before a scene, if you're not afraid of it, then like, are you really putting yourself 100% in that situation?
Yeah, totally.
Especially with writing, because you have to do a lot of investigation into yourself to get the kind of like the feelings or the themes across to other people, right?
Yes. I mean, Harlan Ellison used to say that if you don't want people to see your soul, don't write.
Don't write.
Yeah. I mean, because he said you're going to, you know, I mean, Harlan went a little overboard, but he was like, you're going to rip open your veins and bleed on the page. And I don't know if that's absolutely necessary, but you certainly give things away that you aren't even aware of. Years ago, I was interviewed by a gentleman from the Canadian broadcasting system, and he said to me, everything you write is about fathers and sons. And I went, no, it's not. Oh my God, he's right. And I was completely unaware of it until he had brought it to my attention. And that's sort of that's the thing I'm working out. That's my therapy, I guess.
Yeah. Are there reoccurring themes that you put in your work deliberately as opposed to discovering them later?
Music. I almost always have music. Most of my characters can sing or play an instrument. I studied opera in Vienna.
Oh, wonderful.
Nice.
I'm 5'2" and I'm small and I wasn't exactly built for the grand opera stage.
Yeah.
And while I had a nice voice, I didn't have, you know, that world-class voice. So I love it. And music is vitally important to me. So most of my characters, I deliberately made one character, you know, unable to carry a tune in a bucket just for a change as opposed to everybody else. But normally, I always put music in. And I try to avoid putting horses in too much.
As a sidebar, can you tell us a little about your horses?
Oh, yes. I have two. I have two Lusitanos. Lusitano is a Portuguese breed. They were bred for bullfighting and for war, obviously. And they're brave and agile and smart and wonderful. And I have a white stallion named Vinto da Broga. And I have a buckskin gelding named Donador, who we call Noodles, because it just fits in so well. Vinto, you cannot give Vinto a nickname. His dignity will not stand for it. And I ride dressage, which is the equestrian sport for people with OCD. I started out riding Western because I lived in New Mexico. I grew up in New Mexico. And then discovered jumping, and I jumped for years until I realized that you rarely heard about dressage riders killing themselves. And I'd had a lot of crashes. So then I switched to dressage, and that's what I've been doing. So, yes, those are my babies.
Jay, did you have any other questions about riding?
Well, actually, absolutely. So thank
psychic
you
link that we have.
Absolutely.
All right, Michael, you're up then. You got a question?
Yeah, mine was just a general screenwriting question. What advice would you give somebody that was interested in getting into screenwriting?
Read scripts, mm-hmm. and read the scripts while you watch the movie, or the episode that the screenplay connects to. So you see what worked, what didn't, what changed, why it changed. I think that's important. And it used to be there was only one place you could get screenplays, but now they're all over the internet, you know, just they post them and you can go and read them. And I think seeing what people do, the other thing is if you can afford it, get final draft. It's the, industry standard for what we're using now. I know Scrivener though also has a screen. I use Scrivener for my novels. And they also have a screenwriting function. I don't know how good it is. I've never tested it out. But, you know, have something that helps you make sure the form is proper. And then once you write your screenplay, or even if you just have an idea, you should by all means register it with the Writers Guild of America. Okay. It's open to anybody. You don't have to be a member to register your idea or your screenplay. And it's a protection for you against having it ripped off, frankly. It costs, I believe it's $25, and they receive it, they stamp it, and they keep it for you, and then you can prove this was mine, this was my screenplay, because once you start sending it out, you know, there's always the issue, there are unscrupulous producers in the world, and you have to be a little bit careful.
How often would you say it's a regular danger that people do get ripped off?
More often than I would like to say. It does happen. I mean, you know, the problem is that if somebody approaches you and says, I want to option your book, or I loved your screenplay, before you agree to anything, go to IMDb and see who they are, you know, look at their credentials, because anybody can say, oh, I'm a producer. And if you're not I'm a writing producer, you know, a writer producer, but there's the other kind of producers put talent and money together. They're the guys who go out there. But in that crowd, again, it's not like, you know, there's a lot of policing on who they are. So you want to, you do want to be sure of checking them out before you get in business with them, because they're, you know, it's fairly notorious. And look, honestly, ideas are cheap. I mean, any ideas are easy. It's execution that matters. So I'm always far more concerned about once you've written your spec screenplay. And the other advice I would give is when I broke in, it was customary to write a spec television episode if you wanted to be in TV.
For sure.
Now that's not the way it works. Now they want to see like your spec pilot or your feature film, because they're more interested in seeing what your ideas are and what you bring than, you know, if you can write an episode imitate something else. So it's a somewhat different world than when I broke in. But that would be my primary advice.
Thank you very much.
For those of you in the audience that don't know, a spec script for an episode usually was like, if there was a show running, let's say Westworld, since you brought it up, while Westworld is running, you would write a script for that show with those characters and try to like imitate the mood in the character to make sure that your writing style could mesh well with the one that already existed.
And here's an interesting aside. When it was George R. R. Martin, who got me into screenwriting, and he advised me on all of this. Yeah, I can tell that story if anybody's interested.
Yes, please.
Yeah, please do.
but George said, the other thing is smart agents or managers, like if I had written a spec Westworld script, they would never send it to Westworld.
Oh, for sure.
Because they're going to say, all they're going to see are the mistakes that I made. But they might send that script to, if, you know, Mr. Robot were still going, they might send it there instead. Because they would go, oh, that looks like a really good Westworld script. You know, even it's, you don't want to go to the show that you wrote the spec for. It never works out. So how I got into Hollywood.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes,
please.
okay, so George had moved down to New Mexico, and we all got to know each other. We were all in a role-playing group together, and we became very good friends. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. What role-playing game were you playing?
Good question.
Well, we started out by introducing George to Morrow Project, and then we played Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, nice.
And then our friend Victor Milan made the mistake of giving George Superworld. And George ran Superworld for us obsessively, and we played obsessively.
Nice.
And then George and I decided to, as George said, turn this obsession into money. And so we created our book series called Wild Cards. And book number 28, which I edited and wrote for, is coming out in Britain in May. Nice. So we're up to 28 books in our shared world anthology that George and I oversee as the great gods of the universe here, that grew out of a role-playing game. So
So I'm going to read these books knowing that this was your role-playing. Which character were you playing?
I actually didn't use the character I played, but I created a new one. I created the alien who brought the alien virus to Earth to field test it. So
for the people who don't know what Wild Cards is, what's the pitch on that?
Wild Cards is a longest running shared world anthology all about what really happens to the world when superheroes appear in 1946, and the changes to our culture and our world, and I was actually the executive producer on the TV show that unfortunately didn't move forward, but I was in a writer's room for 10 months working on that last year. And we're hoping to set it up again someplace else because we do things that most superhero shows and books don't do. We look at the real world ramifications in terms of politics, society, culture. And we also have a group of people who are the underclass that allow us to explore issues of racism and classism in very different ways. So
that's amazing.
And there are ramifications. Also, if you die in Wild Cards, you stay dead.
Nice. No. Good. Good.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of George's and my pet peeves is, you know, don't ask me for an
I was going to say, George.
Response and,
George seems to be pretty good about people dying and being dead. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's vicious.
I'm actually so glad you said that because one of the things that I complain about a lot is exactly that, like in all the Marvel movies where they would quote unquote kill a character so that you would feel sad and then the character would come back 5 minutes later. I'm just like, stop using these cheap tactics. It's cheating. So
yeah,
I'm very glad you said that.
Yeah, no, we feel very strongly about that. You know, dead is dead. And it's a cheat to the audience, and eventually they become cynical and they don't care. And,
yes, I had a meltdown about that exact subject a couple of episodes ago, actually.
Sabrina is a very passionate. Yeah, Sabrina is very passionate about writing. So every episode we have, she goes off on a tangent about something, and I'm like, I love it. Please open my eyes. Open my eyes.
Just call me out like that.
Absolutely, I love it.
But it was exactly that. It was a character died and then didn't die, and the whole theme was about mortality. So I was very angry.
Yes, I share your fury. Believe me.
Thank you. This is actually an excellent movement into the next thing I wanted to ask you. What is it about sci-fi specifically as a genre that draws you for writing? Like, does it make it easier to deal with certain genre, certain themes, or you just like creating worlds?
I like creating worlds, and from the time I was a little kid, I always wanted the stars. I mean, you know, I wanted a spaceship. I wanted to go out and see, you know, what was out there, you know, what's waiting for us. because that sense of adventure.
Yeah.
But as a writer, I think one of the things science fiction does for us, aside from the fact I just love it, it allows us to investigate difficult, uncomfortable issues a bit at arm's length. It gives people a safe space to think about racism, you know, gender issues, and to analyze that, analyze their own reactions without it feeling judgmental or as if they're being, you know, put on the spot. And I think that's one of the things that science fiction does really well. It can, you know, take us into issues. I mean, you know, if you look at Westworld, what is humanity? What makes human? Is it inevitable that artificial life and humans will be unable to live in harmony? You know, Elon Musk seems to think so. He's pretty convinced that, that the AIs are going to kill us. You know, I think that's one of the great strengths of science fiction. And I think it also just allows people to, in a way, it's easier to pretend to be a hero if they're, I don't even know how to
say this. If we lack the moral ambiguity of the world that we're currently in.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're trying to say, how do I be heroic in this era? I mean, heroic in this era are the people on the front line in those hospitals and the people in our grocery stores, you know, who are making sure the shelves are stocked you know, bringing, those are heroes, but it doesn't feel heroic. It doesn't feel heroic. And most of us are too scared. I mean, a lot of us would be too scared to do it. I mean, you know, to put yourself in that situation. So you feel like I can't do that. But if you're, you know, if you're Star-Lord or somebody else, you can at least pretend, you know, that maybe I could be that person. So I think it teaches lessons about heroism. I mean, I love the Marvel movies for the most part. Where I don't love them is when they're all about the CGI big battles.
Yep.
I'm much more interested in those character moments. I mean, my favorite, honestly, of all of them was Captain America, the First Avenger. The first half of that movie was a jewel.
Yes.
You know, because that is about humanity. You know, I don't want to kill anybody. I just don't like bullies. I mean, you know, what a great statement. And Erskine, you know, his relationship with Dr. Erskine. But anyway, I'll stop geeking out. Again,
I can listen for.
Yeah, absolutely. Go as long as you'd like.
I don't want to come on too strongly, but the answer that you gave me is that's exactly why sci-fi is important to me, and I love you now. So,
well, thank you. When all of this is over and I get back to LA, we'll have to get together and have a cup of coffee. Yes.
Let me know, and I will. I live in the San Francisco area. I will make that drive. Yeah, I will drive down.
I
live in Colorado, and I will also make the drive.
I live in Wisconsin. I'll start driving right now. Just let me know.
Guys, stop cutting in on my coffee date.
No. Get out of here. I wanted to interject, and you know, everyone in the podcast knows this, but one of the things that drew me to sci-fi in general when I was younger was I was in kind of a rough situation growing up, you know, and when you're a kid, you don't have control. But for that hour, for that 2 hours of a movie or whatever, I could tune out the insanity that was my world, and I could feel like I was part of something bigger or better or different, you know, like just something that just took me out of my reality and allowed me to exist in a better one, even if it was just for a half hour or an hour or 2 hours. And that's, you know, anytime you have fiction, especially, I've always been drawn to science fiction, but fiction in general, those fantasy worlds, they are therapeutic. You know what I mean? Like they really are this amazing outlet for letting your mind just tune out all the crazy that's going on in reality and be a part of something so much better. Or I mean, sometimes worse, you know, it doesn't have to be better, but it's just something different and something that allows you to like almost change your existence for that little period of time, which it makes all the difference. So, I mean, you know, I come from, you know, science fiction and fiction in general being my therapy when I was a kid. I couldn't afford a therapist. So I would go into these, you know, books, these movies, these TV shows that allowed me to exist in a different realm. And it really did help me, you know, get to where I am now, you know?
Yeah, when my parents would have their screaming fights, sometimes I couldn't even hear them because I was reading a book. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, and I think that's, I mean, you know, I'll bring it up because it's like the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. I think that had always been the appeal of Star Trek.
Yeah.
That sense of, you know, a united humanity and hopeful and optimistic. And, you know, even in the Cold War, there was a Russian and there was a woman in a position of power, even though she was a telephone operator.
Yeah.
You know, at least she was there. And so I think that was that sense of hope is, which is why I, by and large, I don't like reading, you know, apocalyptic books or dystopias.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big proponent of the happy ending. There is nothing wrong with the happy ending.
Absolutely.
We do need some happy endings every once in a while, especially right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to also touch on the transformative nature of the metaphor of fiction and how much, like, I tell the story over and over again that, like, Star Trek actually literally cured me of homophobia in one episode. I grew up, you know, Christian, and, like, I had my values, and I knew where I stood. And then they did the asexual episode where Riker goes to the asexual planet, and the woman gives a speech at the end where she says, "Who are you to tell me how to live?" And in one episode, in that moment, I was like, I've been the bad guy this entire time. Oh, my God. And, yeah, like, that never left me. So, like, yeah, me and science fiction go way back, and, like, yeah, it's perfect therapy just by going to a library. So, yeah.
It's also an excellent example of what you were saying earlier about sci-fi giving you a distance from your personal issue or behavior or whatever so that you can be more objective about it and then make that decision that way, like, hold on, wait, I'm on the wrong side here.
Yeah.
Or right side or whatever.
Yeah.
Can I ask a quick question about science fiction here? So my question for you is, like, the your view of the landscape of science fiction. I want to know, what was, like, that first hint of, like, holy crap, what's science fiction? And then, like, kind of like your feelings on, like, your favorite eras and how things have changed over the eras. So what was, like, your first kind of, like, the spark?
Well, it was my dad. My dad taught me to read before I went to school. And he also used to read me bedtime stories. And the book that he chose, he would read to me 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Nice. And he left out all the fish stuff, you know. He would sort of focus on the exciting parts. But again, it was that a different world, a mysterious captain, you know, a ship that could have been a spaceship, you know. I mean, there was, and so I think he instilled in me this love of science fiction right from the beginning. And he was a voracious reader. My dad had insomnia. He would read a book a night. I mean, he was crazy. And so, you know, that was the start. And then at the library, the very first science fiction book I can remember reading all by myself was A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Cool.
And I think I was 7. And then at around age 10, we were on a visit to my dad's business partners in Los Angeles, and I was bored. And I was a kid. They took me to a bookstore because that's where I wanted to be all the time. And I picked up the Lord of the Rings, and they only wanted to buy me the first book, but I was insistent that I wanted all three of those amazing books with those covers, you know, those old Bantam, with the sort of weird map and everything. And so they bought me all three books, and I spent the entire weekend in our friend Rodney's house, sitting in the bedroom upstairs, and I read all three books over like 3 days. And then I realized I had just gobbled them, and so I started all over again. And in fact, I think I've read The Lord of the Rings like seven or eight times all the way through my life. It's a place I go, you know, just to find peace and security. Science fiction has changed profoundly. I mean, we've gone from, you know, the sort of blasters and manly men doing manly things, you know, of the early eras into a much more interesting, diverse science fiction. Yeah, the Buck Rogers, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's certainly enjoyable. But I think we've gone to a place where, you know, this is literature. I mean, I've always hated that dichotomy anyway, but certainly now we much more so. And also we won. I mean, my God, all of entertainment is we inherit, the geeks inherited the earth.
Mm-hmm. In regards to storytelling, at least. Yeah, very much.
Yeah, whether it's gaming, our television or movies or whatever it happens to be, we won. It's our world. And unfortunately, we bitch about it too much instead of saying, "Oh, thank you, we won.
Thank you. Yeah. More stuff.
Yeah, stop complaining and enjoy what's there.
We do have a lot of sci-fi now. I just wish that more of it was optimistic sci-fi.
Yeah, well, it does. I don't know, it doesn't feel as apocalyptic. I mean, I don't do zombies. Zombies bore me. That's not a genre I particularly, know much about. But it does feel like some of the others are raising interesting questions, And
do you feel there's a certain part of science fiction we're not getting enough of lately?
I wish we had more space, based science fiction.
Rather than like Westworld being.
Yeah, I mean, I love Westworld, don't get me wrong, but I really would like more, more Guardians of the Galaxy, please. give me spaceships and different planets. I understand why we can't do that. I mean, I'm in the industry.
Right.
My manager, I have this big space opera book series I've been writing, and he's like, "Ooh, everybody wants that." And I said, "They say they do." They really
Why do you feel
don't.
We aren't getting that? Because, I'm starting to know, I hit a deficit of, I miss spaceships and stuff. So I finally went back to Stargate. And now, I'm running the end of, the Stargate that I have. I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to run out again.
Oh, no.
Why aren't we getting more?
Well, expense is a lot of it. I mean, it's a lot of effect shots and spaceships. And there is this sort of attitude in the industry that spaceships means Star Trek and nothing else. Only Star Trek works. Now, The Expanse, I think, is starting to at least nibble at the edges of that and saying, no, actually, spaceships can work. But then you get into the added problem of aliens. I mean, like I said to my manager, we can't do my series. The treatment of aliens as second-class citizens is a huge part of my books. And we have to have the five alien species. The makeup costs or the CGI costs would make this virtually impossible to do. And we ran into that in Wild Cards because we have this group of people who have been twisted by the virus and changed their physicality into sort of horrific forms. The makeup, we knew we were looking at with some of the Joker, we call them Jokers, and our superheroes are called Aces in Wild Cards. We knew we were looking at 6 hours of makeup on some of these major Joker characters, which means you can shoot for 4 hours, or 3 hours. Yeah. Yeah. And so all of that becomes a real issue. And maybe the avatar technology can be scaled down to be useful, but, I don't know that that's been established yet.
Yeah, we're not there quite yet. And all that's been put on pause.
Yes, we are on pause very much.
Yeah.
Everyone is.
Absolutely. I love that you brought up... Guys... Oh, I'm sorry. I just love that you brought up The Expanse. It's one of my favorites right now.
I was actually going to ask about it if you didn't bring it up. Because it does take place in space, but it doesn't do as much exploration like Star Trek or like Firefly did. It's... Okay, I admit I'm only a couple episodes in, but it's like...
What's incredible about it is that I've read the first couple books and seen the entire series. It's the first space science fiction I've ever seen that treats our solar system like science fiction usually treats the galaxy.
Yes. Well, Ty and Daniel are friends of mine. And I actually have read all, I love the books. I think they're brilliant writers and the books are fantastic. I can't wait for the 9th book that's coming out this summer. I also read the first book in Crit Group, in our critique group. So I read it in manuscript.
Oh, and nice.
The Expanse started as a game.
That one too, huh?
Ty Frank was running it. In fact, I actually played in it. And one when he was running it for us here in New Mexico, I was the captain of the Rosinante.
No, oh my God. That's amazing.
Did you name the ship?
And George was playing a space pirate.
Oh my God.
So, so yeah, you know, I have great fondness for the Expanse. I mean, the books are amazing. So.
What system did you guys use?
GURPS. I think Ty ran a different one. Ty used a different system that I was less familiar with. More percentile based than GURPS, which is a little simpler, and I like GURPS. It's straightforward. And also, I had my pretty D20 dice, you know.
Oh, yeah, nice. Of course.
I have a very, very, very important question.
Okay.
How do we get in on these games? No, just
we
kidding.
We have to restart them. I mean, unfortunately, everybody... I mean, I love it because all my friends have become very successful, and I also hate it because none of us get to do it anymore.
Yeah,
I was wondering.
I miss it so much. Oh my God.
I have to confess to you. Sorry for the three of you. I'm just gonna cut in with a personal moment.
Do it.
Here.
Okay. Go.
I've been playing. I was an improv in college and an improv team, and two members of that improv team moved to New York, but, you know, we love spending time together, so we've been playing tabletop role plays over the internet, and one of them has written a book series based on one of our campaigns that we finished, and I'm gonna tell her, I'm like, listen, this is how a lot of famous books have been written. I also just created a tabletop system for, like, an investigative paranormal adventure. So if you want me to run a game for you, I would be more than happy.
I have two other invitations to play online. I haven't jumped in yet because it, you know, part of the fun of being in a role playing group is all of you gathered in the living room with lots of useless snacks. You know,
yes.
You know, you got to have your part. Yeah, you got to have your Cheetos and your chips and salsa.
Your Mountain Dew.
You are family. You're so
one of us.
And of course,
Jay, you're behind. You need to catch up on the
tabletop. I would make brownies or chocolate chip cookies. You know? You gotta fuel the bod while you're fighting monsters or whatever.
Were those normal brownies or
normal brownies?
We are eyes really shifting.
We are dull people. we don't even drink much. I mean
clearly
science fiction.
Yeah, right. I was gonna say clearly your combined imagination makes up for anything that other people need to imbibe.
I think that's totally true. Yeah, when you're in a role-playing group with Daniel Abraham, George R. R. Martin, at one point Roger Zelazny was in our gaming group.
Wow.
You know, yeah, Walter John Williams. Yeah, you kind of look around and go, wow.
Well, this is certainly giving me hope for my future. Excellent. Thank you.
Speaking of gaming, so are you saying that you don't get much time to do tabletop gaming anymore since, like, everybody's pretty busy?
Yes.
the next question would be, to fill that hole, are you finding that, what video games are you going to get that itch scratched?
Well, let's see. Right now I'm playing Pillars of Infinity because it's a lot like Dragon Age, which is my favorite game ever.
Oh, nice.
I'm running through Dragon Age again right now.
I just the second one was trash. It was supposed to just be a DL, but
nice.
I'm sorry. Oh God. But no,
no, please.
Yeah, we like talking smack about our fiction.
We do. Yeah. I'm playing Dragon Age Origins right now.
Oh my God, it's the best game ever.
And I love Claudia Black, and I love Zephyr. She's so great. My problem is I don't like the AI for the characters. I keep, like, running into problems for the combat, and I'm like, why is the combat so bad when the plot is so good?
Because it was such an early game. I mean, just the narrative, it is the best narrative story. And be careful, if you play as a complete bastard or you're an awful human being, you will go into the final battle. Your people will walk away from you. They will. Companions will abandon you, which I love. There are moral choices. And anytime you want, I played it through completely four times. So if you need any pointers, let me know. Just email me. We'll talk. I love that game. And Dragon Age 3 is very, very good. I can't wait for 4. I enjoyed Mass Effect. I played all three games twice. Quit before the last 15 minutes of the last game. They blew the ending,
but Mass Effect is my favorite series. The second
I love it, those games, but the ending is it was a mess, and I was heartbroken. So I wrote an enormous piece of fan fiction to finish it my way.
Can you email me this fan fiction?
Yeah, yeah.
It's on my website. Oh. It's on my website under writing.
Perfect. I knew it.
Yeah, it's my Shepherd and his relationship and how it ends, and it was supposed to be comedic, and it turned into a big story about PTSD and survivor's guilt. But
Anyway,
I wrote 140 freaking pages of fan fiction, which I have nothing against. Fan fiction is awesome, but I was so angry over that.
perfect. The longest fan fiction I've ever written is 150K, so I understand.
Yeah, it was. I the spirit moved me because I was like, "How dare you brought together this huge bad."
I knew when you said Mass Effect, Sabrina just perked up.
Hello. Not just Sabrina. Mass Effect is also like my top game. I'm wondering. So I got two questions. Where do I start? Let's start with Mass Effect. I'm like the only person I know that really wasn't that bothered by the ending. Don't hit me.
Wait, which one? Which one? The pre-DLC ending or the post-DLC ending?
Both. I like the DLC ending where I got to have like all the people hang together one more time, make the final decision for the galaxy.
Are you going to be red, blue, or green?
I went for some kind of whatever would be like the most balanced.
Do you take over the Reapers? You get rid of the Reapers, or you make the humans and the AI friends?
Friends. Okay. There you go.
That's the green
end. Yeah. So, Melinda, what didn't you like and what ending did you choose, if we can ask?
Okay. I didn't like it because they indicated to me that my efforts to create comedy and unity between the AIs, between all the divergent alien races, we'd come together to defeat an enemy, and it mattered not at all. And they violated a cardinal sin. They rang in a new bad guy in the last 20 minutes of the game.
Ooh.
Who Can't is argue this kid? Whatsoever. Who is the star kid? I mean, out of nowhere. And I thought it needed to be who it was. Sovereign. Who is the big Reaper? The name of the big Reaper?
Yeah, Sovereign.
Sovereign. It needed to be Sovereign. And if Sovereign had put himself in the form of that child, then, but it was never set up, and all of it felt rushed and like a cheat.
Definitely.
And especially, I had worked so hard to try to bring everybody together, and then to have it not matter was an enormous betrayal of the players who had committed so many hours of game.
That's the one thing that Andromeda fixed, I think. Aside from that, I'm not really a big fan of Mass Effect Andromeda. It was kind of a remake of the trilogy.
I couldn't play it. I played 30 hours and gave up. I just went, you know, Andromeda didn't work for me, even though
That's the one thing that was different. At the end, all the allies that you made did show up, and they did make a difference.
And they made a difference. Hmm. Well, that would have been nice. I didn't get to the end because I got bored. I was like, it's another dungeon crawl.
I understand. I forced myself to finish it.
The other thing
I played
is,
through all of it. Okay, good.
No, the ending that I picked, and I picked it because the relationship that Shepard had to the Admiral, when the Admiral comes up and says, "We got to get rid of these mofos," and I was like, "You are absolutely right." You know? And I had the option for the green ending, and I was like, "Oh no, 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 I blasted them into oblivion." I was like, "We're done," because you can't offer me my mentor and have me reject him, and I certainly wasn't going to listen to the elusive man. What a creep. And after fighting these things and watching the Reapers kill literally trillions of living creatures, I was like, no, you're dead.
Good call. Good call.
So no, I killed them all. But no, I was very frustrated because it could have been the greatest franchise of all time. And as a result, I have to give Dragon Age, it has the edge for me over Mass Effect, only because they end it so much better. And you will see when you get there. I can't wait to discuss it with you, Sabrina.
Excellent.
But what about Knights of the Republic?
Oh, I love Knights of the Old Republic. Yes.
Yeah. I haven't that time. Yeah, it's Star Wars time.
Hold on. Before we go to Star Wars, because I know that that's going to take a big chunk.
that's going to take the rest of our time.
I have one question that I want to interject real quick, and I want to ask, what is your favorite sci-fi series? Like, books, movies, TV, like, what is the epitome of your, like, what is your favorite sci-fi?
Favorite sci-fi? God, this is such a hard question because I love so much really of
difficult.
It.
Difficult,
and that's acceptable too.
Okay, if I must answer, I will say my favorite sci-fi is in fact Star Wars.
Okay, okay,
hell yeah.
And then
okay.
one
was
mm-hmm. yes,
yeah.
Which part of Star Wars?
Oh yeah.
Well, not these latest, not the latest ones.
Not the latest movies. Yeah, no doubt.
What kind of time crunch are we on?
Yeah, I'll be good. I'll go more than the hour. It's not like I'm eager to go and do more proof and more polish on this.
More proof
that I have to get back to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Favorite Star Wars, like a movie or a TV show or a book, whatever.
A movie, Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Nice. I mean,
damn near a perfect
what other
film.
Answer yeah. is there?
Yep.
Yeah. And
and
in terms of the series, you know, Clone Wars, Rebels, it's hard, but I think I'm going to give it to Rebels. Hmm. A little. Clone Wars. And part of that might be the fact there's a character I love.
Hera?
I do really, you know, I think the two animated and The Mandalorian is incredible.
Oh, it's so good.
For the second season. It's so good. Yeah, but no, I
how about book.
Yeah.
Star Wars book?
Sorry. I've actually only read Timothy Zahn's Thrawn books. I don't tend to read a lot of tie-in just mm-hmm. because there's, you know, so much out there. And also I'm writing my own work. But the only ones I've read are the Thrawn novels, and they're excellent. So, I have read the Darth Vader comics because I love Darth Vader.
How about... me and my buddies all read this the Timothy Zahn stuff. What was it like when you first read them for you? Like, because like I remember like back in that era, like it was like Star Wars had kind of just freaking disappeared, and then out of the ether comes these books. And like, do you feel this was like a good follow up, or do you? Yeah.
Well, I actually haven't read the earlier ones. I've only read the latest ones that he's done, the three Thrawn and Alliances, and I have not read the early ones. I keep meaning to, but I've been kind of busy. And so, yeah, I have not actually read the ones that are from the Legends era versus, you know, the new canon. I think the idea, I mean, he very much is a Sherlock Holmesian character, and I like Holmes. I've always enjoyed those stories. So I think there's something that is very appealing about a man who, you know, is so cerebral, and tries to be decent within the parameters of what decency implies within the Empire. But I've enjoyed them. So, and I think that the Darth Vader comics, I'm blanking on the writer's name, Sully, that the new run of Darth Vader comics have been amazing. These graphic novels. They're great.
Let's see. Going back to...
I'm going to interrupt for a second. Hold on.
Oh, please go.
Can you tell me about your favorite character in Rebels and what it is about that specific character that like draws you so strongly?
It's Agent Callus. It's the ISB agent. My literary agent is actually we're trying to talk to the star. I really want to write a novel about him, a prequel, an earlier, because I'm fascinated with the Empire, especially in this era of Trump. I'm fascinated with why people would embrace that, you know, what that means, you know, why do you serve? I mean, I like redemption stories, and he has an interesting one. Also, there was a great voice actor, you know, doing the role. And so that, you know, I think all of the characters are terrific. you know, Hera is a wonderful character, the captain of the
Ghost.
She's
my favorite.
She's wonderful character.
Yeah, she's Luke Skywalker level for me.
Yeah, she's and Sabine. I mean, it's a great bunch of characters. But for me, Agent Kallus is my favorite character. Just like, I guess, you know, in Star Wars, it's Darth Vader and Leia, who are the two that. I mean, you know, Luke, bless his heart, it's always hard to be a hero. Heroes are intrinsically end up kind of dull. And that's not their fault. You know, we have to imbue them with all of the good aspects that we want. And villains
really good
are
people are kind of boring.
Yeah, really good. I mean, that's what was wrong with Next Generation. I mean, you know, perfect people are dull. And so it's more fun when you have complex characters. Mm-hmm. So I think Rebels and Clone Wars, I mean, Clone Wars salvaged Anakin. I mean, you suddenly, your heart is breaking when you know what's coming, you know.
Lip trembling. Yeah, me and my friends, we had accepted how much we hated the prequel Anakin, and we were like, well, that's done. So, like, we all made sure not to watch Clone Wars until it was way over, until, like, a friend of mine, like, twisted my arm behind my back and says, no, Keith, you need to see this, and yeah, like, it took over everything. We just said, oh my god, I think this is Top Empire Strikes Back for us. But it takes, you know, several seasons to do it, but yeah.
Yeah, and I was, you know, and I had this sort of, well, I don't watch cartoons. And then a friend of mine said, you have to watch Clone Wars. Well, I just gobbled, I binged it. I couldn't, I was like, oh my god, I can't stop. And then another friend said, okay, you liked Clone Wars? You've got to check out Rebels.
And then it ate your life.
And they've eaten my life, yeah.
The Ghost is such a gorgeous spaceship.
I'm sorry?
The Ghost is such a gorgeous spaceship. I put it over the Millennium Falcon in my... anyway.
We don't get to see enough of the Millennium Falcon. I mean, that's the problem. Mm. With the Ghost, you know, it feels like a comfortable old pair of shoes. You know, I know where those bunks are and where the sort of common room is and where the galley is. And, you know, it feels... With the Millennium Falcon, you saw a hallway... You know, the pilot's area, and then that was in the area where Luke, you know, gets zapped by a drone a couple of times, and they play chess. I don't have a sense of the ship, and I had a real sense of the ship in Rebels.
So, big question about Star Wars: can you tell us your feelings like each of the trilogies?
Well, obviously, I love the first, the one that launched the original trilogy. Although Return of the Knee-High, it was kind of a letdown. I mean, the relationship, the father-son thing, that worked great for me, and the romance. I didn't, but the first two, I mean, they took my breath away. And listen, my confession time. People laugh at me, but I don't care. You won't laugh at me. So I was a deeply unhappy lawyer.
I can imagine.
And Star Wars got me through the bar exam, the original film. I managed to survive the bar exam by going and seeing Star Wars like 7 times. And then the second movie came out, and I'm now practicing law. And my best friend at the time was a novelist, a man named Victor Milan. We had started going to see these movies together. And I'm sitting there miserable. I'd met his friends, all the writing group, you know, Fred Saberhagen, Susie McKee Charnas, Zelazny. And we get to the scene where Yoda says to Luke, do or do not, there is no try. And I thought, that is so true. And I don't want to be in this law office. If I stay here, I'm going to end up 30 years from now, bitter and angry and terrorizing some young associate the way I'm being terrorized. And I walked in the next day and I quit.
Wow.
On the spot.
Nice. Good for you.
Walked in love, typed up my letter of resignation, put all my little stuff in a box, my diplomas and so forth, my little plant, walked in, laid the letter on my boss's desk, and I walked out and said to Vic, help me write. And he became my mentor. And I started, you know, writing in secret till I had sold something, and with just Vic helping me and knowing. And that was so, you know, I feel like I owe Star Wars this life that I love. And I can never repay that, you know, and if I can repay it in some small way by getting to write, you know, one Star Wars novel, I would be thrilled. And I think that's so why in some ways it's, even though I grew up on Trek and, you know, I love Trek, Star Wars is more, there's a richness to it. There's an aspirational quality to Star Trek, but yes, there's a richness to Star Wars that makes me feel like I could live there. Yeah. And I'm not sure, I don't exactly know how to live in the Federation because it feels a little dull.
It's a little too good.
It's a little too clean, yeah.
Well, it was.
So we have Yoda to thank. We have Yoda to thank for some of the best fiction that some of your fans have ever enjoyed.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I owe Yoda a debt. So, thank you.
So how do you feel about the prequel trilogy then?
You know, I went back and rewatched them. The first one is a mess. I mean, look, the problem is that Lucas is an editor. He's not a writer. Mm-hmm. And that was abundantly clear, unfortunately. Yep. You know, Revenge of the Sith is not actually that bad of a movie. And even the second one isn't as awful as I recalled it be. You know, I mean, when I rewatched them, I went, okay, these are not as terrible. The first one is pretty terrible. But, you know, although if you want the history, if you want to understand the grand sweep of things, especially now with Rebels and, you know, all the other, and Clone Wars, it was worth rewatching it. Mm-hmm. In terms of the newest ones, you know, the first one was just a remake of A New Hope. I mean, it was the exact same structure, exact same, I mean, which was disappointing. And now you may all shoot me. I really liked The Last Jedi.
No. I actually did too.
I think it had...
Keith did not, but I did.
Yeah, I understand. People have genuine love for it. It broke my heart, but yeah, please go ahead.
No, I thought it was brave, and it took chances, and it was a deconstruction of myth, and I thought that was fascinating. And I was so then disappointed when what followed it was The Rise of Skywalker, which... you know, I was there on opening day because it's Star Wars, but I was so disappointed. It meant that Anakin's sacrifice for his son meant nothing. It meant nothing. None of it meant anything at that point. So it's apocrypha, sort of like the last two seasons of Buffy are apocrypha. Buffy ended at the end of season 5. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if I ever, I actually did purchase The Last Jedi, because that one I will probably rewatch. There was something about it that, and everybody complains about the second act on the casino planet, but I thought it made a very good point, which is, you know, who are the real villains? I mean, they're selling weapons to all sides. I mean, you know. In a war, and that's kind of what I want. If I ever get to do this Star Wars novel, that's sort of what I want to look at is, you know, we casually kill. If you look at Clone Wars, I'm sorry, I'm just babbling.
No, please.
No.
This, absolutely.
This is what we want to hear. Please.
I mean,
these
if you look at the conversations we have, like, off air. So.
If you look at the Clone Wars, the death of these men, even though they're all identical, supposedly, is treated with great reverence, and they're acknowledged. And then when we get into the Empire proper, they kill stormtroopers as if they are Lego figures.
Yes.
And that bothers me. I mean, it's like, the clones were bred to be cannon fodder. And yet we honor them with a sense of they grieve, they care for each other, they call each other brothers. We get to the stormtroopers who aren't clones, who are people who presumably signed up because they wanted three cots and a cot, you know?
Or because they're kidnapped children.
Yeah. Or kidnapped children, which I actually didn't like. I think it's actually more interesting if you say, why did you join the Wehrmacht in 1940? You know, who is that person? Why? Mm-hmm. Why did they do that? You know, are they necessarily... you know, mustache twirling evil. No, I mean, people do things. These people who are out in the streets of Wisconsin screaming about wanting to go get their hair done when they could carry home a virus, you know, why? What is it that impels these people? And that is what interests me. If you just say it's kidnapped, then it loses some of the analysis of what happens to a society and a culture. How did the Clone Wars lead people to say, yeah, that's what I want, the Empire? You know,
yeah.
Why did people vote for Donald Trump?
Yeah.
What was wrong with the society that made people say, yeah, that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are you trying to say with this?
Yeah.
If you ever want to explore that, there's a book series I keep recommending that does the greatest exploration of why people do what they do. It's called Three Body Problem. It's Chinese science fiction.
Yes. Yeah.
It transformed me like Star Trek did.
It certainly did because you haven't stopped talking about it.
I will never stop talking about it.
A thing I admire. That's definitely not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, good. Mm. I'm glad something has affected you so strongly that you want to, like, affect other people's lives with it.
You know, since we're talking about Star Wars and we're talking about science fiction, we have this amazing guest. This is something we haven't talked about on the podcast because obviously we're mostly a Star Trek podcast, but Rogue One. How do you all feel about that? Because I loved Rogue One.
Yeah, I loved it.
I loved it. Yes, that's the other one I bought immediately. Mm-hmm. I have to have this movie.
Yeah, I don't know what it was about that movie and how it came together and just the writing, the characters, the story. It was so amazing. It literally shocked me at how good it was.
And go ahead.
Except for just the weird, like, Tarkin and young Leia graphics. Mm-hmm. Those weirded me out. But aside from that, yeah.
Yeah, the uncanny valley is always a problem.
Yep.
No, I mean it was perfection. I loved that movie. I thought it was courageous. I mean, at the end, I literally took my breath away, and I sat there thinking, this is a Disney Star Wars movie with this ending,
right?
Oh my God, because it was the perfect ending. It was the only ending.
I just got chills.
To anything right. else. Yeah.
I'm glad you said it like that. As a writer, there's always, I'm, you know more about this than I do, but there's that moment where, like, I feel that a story is well-structured if I get to the ending and I'm like, there's no other way it can end. If there's several ways that it can end, like, you didn't do it solid.
I agree. Yeah. No, you have to write to that conclusion. You have to take the reader there, or the viewer there, and they have to say, yep, that was inevitable. That was... And you have to foreshadow it, and they did so beautifully all the way through the movie.
There was that quote from your friend George, where he said, you know, like, if you start writing a book and a specific character has done it, and then on the internet they guess that specific character has done it, so you change the ending, then the whole thing is garbage, mm-hmm. basically.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not a direct quote, but
yeah. I get the gist, yes.
So, let me ask you how you feel about the final trilogy, specifically in regards to whether it's... I personally would say it's not a trilogy because the three movies were clearly developed separately and not with, like, an overall arc. How do you feel about that?
You are absolutely right. This felt like a mad scramble. It did not feel like they had sat down and thought this thing through. I mean, really, I would rather have seen it be a television series, especially with what we're doing now, where you can plot these 10, 12 episode arcs and have the time. But it felt like a panicked response out of Disney and disappointing. So, you know, again, I'm probably won't watch... You know, they're not something that I'm eager to rewatch except for Last Jedi. I mean, that would be the only one because it felt very human. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. I think, fortunately, you know, they're giving us this lovely last season of Clone Wars. And we've got The Mandalorian and, you know, supposedly an Obi-Wan Kenobi show. You know, which Obi-Wan?
Right.
Where will he be? Yeah.
What are you hoping for from the Obi-Wan show?
Yeah, I really don't want to see him living on Tatooine. I mean, that is less interesting to me than I'd kind of like to know more about when he got to know the Duchess, you know, on Mandalore.
Nice. Agreed.
You know, that part of his life. is of interest to me. So, you know, we'll see. It'll be, definitely. It will be intriguing and, to see what they do. I would love to help out. just like I would love to help out in Picard, since you guys seem to think so highly of Measure of a Man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We would love you
This kind of ties into some...
I think you could only...
Well, that's, yeah, there's something I brought up on the podcast quite often is the binge culture and just how seasons have truncated into 10 or, well, sometimes even 8 to 10 to 12 episodes. And yeah, and there's no, like, you don't get this humanity and this character development. You don't give people time to do these story arcs. You have to throw it out at them quickly. And there's just, it's almost like there's a lack of heart in a lot of ways because you don't really get these, you know, I want to know, kind of like what you were saying about Obi-Wan. Like, I want to know more about this character and how this character and this character connected and how, you know, just I want more
about character relationships and less about action
and boom boom. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, action sequences are fun and yeah, like fights are fun, but I'm more about the cerebral, you know, like I want to know what's going on and I want more story arc. And you know, I miss those 20-30 episode seasons, you know, where you get these season long story arcs. Yeah. Like it just, you know, I miss that. I miss that in a lot of the stuff. And that's actually one thing that The Expanse is really good at, which is amazing. You know, is you get these multiple seasons of this whole story arc between Earth and Mars and the Belters and all this stuff. And it's just, I love it because there's just so much goodness to it. You know, there's so much goodness there. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Well, and I think for those of us who have worked on the 22 episode shows, and they're kind of killers. I mean, honestly, I think the limited 10 feels like a good number. Mm-hmm. 8 feels a little too truncated, but you can tell, you can figure out, you know, what is the overarching problem that we're going to deal with in this set of stories. Mm-hmm. And then you can wrap it up and you can tell it. When you're into 22, mm-hmm. it's very hard to have this. And often when most of the networks did not want you to have an overarching plot because they wanted to be able to, you know, send these out in any order they wanted.
Yep.
There was also, it becomes a crushing work schedule. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like laying track for a train that's like 300 feet behind you. And so often you end up with the inevitable clip show or, oh my God, what can we do next week? How about if we do It's a Wonderful Life again? You know? Mm-hmm. Anytime
do you feel that stress is why?
Yeah, anytime
do you feel that stress is why we don't get that anymore?
Well, expense. I think that and viewership has become so fragmented. Also, the network model is gone. I mean, it's dying.
Yeah.
And everything is going to be streamers. And they're trying to find, you know, what Mad Men proved is that you can have a show that's successful with 900,000 people watching it.
Yeah. I work for an ad agency and I love Mad Men.
Yeah. Yes. But it tells you that, I mean, we're slicing and dicing and targeting people. I know this is for this demographic. This is, you know, the algorithms are there that tell them. And so in some ways, the 22 episodes that have to appeal to 30 million people, that's not the model. That's not the world we're living in anymore. And they're probably not going to come back. I mean, you know, there's a generation that loves it. You know, the CBS viewer are still very happy with, you know, the NCSI.
And, yeah.
But that's becoming much, much less. And binge culture has changed everything. It changes how we apply.
Yeah.
You have to go in and think about this almost as if it's a novel that I have to tie up this story. And then there's the next book in the series is the way I try to think about it. That each season builds on itself to the next one. I mean, clearly they did that beautifully in The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, we're set up. We know what's coming in the second season, you know? And that's powerful, but I think it can be done. It's just, everybody worries that the viewers will tune out if there's not enough bang, bang, boom, boom. And that's not true.
Yeah.
I mean, we love fiction because we want people to interact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
we want to experience our world through fictional writing. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have one final question for you, but I'll let everybody else ask anything. If they
I can. Had a quick question. Maybe it might not be quick, but since you brought it up earlier, Melinda, what was your thoughts on the first season of Picard overall?
There was a lot of it that I actually did like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought the direction, art direction was beautiful. Jonathan did a great job on the episodes he directed. You know, great cast, good performances. Structurally, I have issues. I feel like, you know, I was like, there were missed opportunities that left me questioning and wondering. And I just... The ending baffled me a bit,
yeah.
I confess. Mm-hmm. The last three episodes were just sort of head-scratching a bit. And also, again, don't ask me for an emotional response and then tell me it doesn't matter because you stuck Picard in a robot body.
Yeah.
I
mean, yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've.
I didn't want to bring it up, yep. But that is actually the thing I had a meltdown about.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I was just like, well, for one thing, you knew it was coming. They'd been telegraphing it back.
Yeah.
You know, blunt, too obviously.
Hey, guys, we have a golem here.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And we can download personalities. And you know, but there were just like all of these. I mean, also, I feel very personally about poor Bruce Maddox getting murdered.
Yeah.
But I
yeah.
kept going,
of course.
Why is he on the Las Vegas planet in the first place? Why isn't he home with his creations? I mean, what... They never explained why he left. I mean, I was just like, what? Yeah. And then you murdered
mm-hmm.
him.
Yeah.
So, yep. okay. But, yeah, I was very frustrated. And
that he was a plot device?
He was, yeah. I mean, well, he was a MacGuffin for the first four episodes, and then they killed
Indeed.
Him.
Indeed.
Yeah, so, but I, you know, here was my crazy suggestion when I was being interviewed by somebody, and they thought I was nuts, but I was like, if they had really been courageous, they would have downloaded Picard's personality and cast some fabulous British actor, young British actor, you know, a Tom Hiddleston, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
and had them take over
to be the,
over
new, Picard.
Mm-hmm. To be the yes. new Picard.
Yeah,
that would have been interesting.
That would have been quite this a twist, absolutely.
Yeah, and then at least I would have gone, okay, that's interesting.
Well, even in one of the previous episodes, I was like, wouldn't it be amazing if the golem was Tom Hardy and he started yeah. playing Picard because he played Picard? Yeah.
And then we were like, Tom Hardy.
But wouldn't that be amazing if, like, the guy that played Picard in Nemesis ended up becoming Picard? I don't know. It yeah, just, cool. yeah.
That is a cool idea. That's
yeah, just, I mean, cool, yeah. do something to shake this up. I mean, that would yeah. have been my, and there were things, what I also did really like is the fact that the universe wasn't as clean and shiny as the TV mm-hmm. shows there. You know, there was a Romulan pirate. Who was that guy? I, you know, why, and why was he shooting at them? You know, I wanted, okay, I have to get, so Rios says, a cash gift is always, you know, whatever, welcome. Yeah. So obviously welcome. They bribed them to get, to allow Picard to go down to the planet. I wanted them to have paid the bribe to that Romulan dude.
Yeah.
And the check bounced.
The pirate?
And the check, yeah, the pirate and the check bounced. And that's why he's shooting.
That would be
I mean, you know, because Rios didn't actually have the credits.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't the money. And he's shooting at, because why? I mean, that would have been fun. Yeah. But I liked yeah. I liked the fact that the world had, you know, black market traders and in, you know, mm-hmm. casino planets and
some
and
of the
pirates.
Grime.
But yeah, give me some grime.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the cute elfin guy uses a sword when there are phasers, right. but okay.
He's a space elf.
Yeah, he is a space elf. so yeah, it was, you know, again, show looked great. There were some lovely performances. I just hope they get a little better sense about what it is they want this show to talk about.
Yeah.
I guess.
Now I do have a question actually, because this, it's almost like they took your episode Measure of a Man and developed a series, from it. So, I mean, do you, yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. So do you have like a, does that just as the person who wrote, you know, and worked on Measure of a Man, like, that's got to feel good. That's got to just feel amazing to, like, to feel like that gem. And by the way, that was an amazing episode. I mean, that, like, everyone,
yeah.
that episode is just so real and raw and amazing. And Picard and Riker and just the character, just the conflicts and all. It's just, it's, Mickey it Riker was do so that. Good.
Oh my God.
So good.
Heartbreaking.
And I mean, just, it's got to feel amazing to, like, have this gem that is yours that, you know, essentially became what, because it's what's what Picard is. So, you know, the new series. So, of course, if they had you on it, it would be nothing but amazing because they're already using that mm-hmm. episode, you know. And Maddox, mind you, we all were irritated when Maddox got killed. It was like, why was he even around? Why was he even in the show? But I mean, how do you feel about that, just as the person that worked on and wrote Measure of a Man?
Well, I was quite flattered to, you know, discover that they thought that highly. I mean, the weird thing was, is that I had no idea. I mean, honestly, I've never watched another episode of Trek after I left the show. It was a difficult mm-hmm. show. And yeah. I had no mm-hmm. intention of watching Picard either, except that suddenly I started, after the first episode, I started getting all of these messages from fans saying, did you know they're building this show? And I was like, what? I didn't know. I mean, nobody reached out to me mm-hmm. to say, hey, you know, we're doing this. And that felt, I'll be honest, disrespectful.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine,
you know, so, you know, while I'm flattered that they thought highly of the work, I was very appreciative when Michael Chabon, gave that nice shout out on Instagram, because oftentimes women get erased off their own creative work.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that was how I felt initially, because there was no acknowledgement mm-hmm. of, you know, where this had come from. And it was very nice to get that acknowledgement from Michael. So, and I do think it happens more frequently to women, than it does yep. to men.
That reminds me of how they changed Lucarno's name to Tom Paris so they wouldn't have to, you know, get yeah. in touch with the person who wrote that episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not a new thing in the Star Trek world.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, I do like, there's that strange distinction in Star Trek where the show itself is all about, like, the optimism and the future of a world where everybody's treated equally, but then behind the scenes has been notoriously kind of, like, anti-woman.
yeah. Hmm. Yes, very much. So,
but let's not talk about that, Keith.
No, let's not talk about the nope. downsides.
Did you have any questions to ask?
My final question would be, in the current landscape of science fiction, what recommendations do you currently have right now where you think people are not giving enough credit, and you think, guys, you need to check this out, like Three Body Problem?
Oh gosh. Wow.
Yes, give us your recommendations, please.
mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Max Gladstone. He's a wonderful writer, and I recruited him for Wild Cards because he's so good. Obviously, Wild Cards, I think very highly of it, but people should message me so I can sort of guide them, because 28 books, it's a little daunting. Let me help you get into the series.
Excellent.
And George and I have gotten a lot better about how to edit and manage this unwieldy thing too over the years, so I think the later books are somewhat better than our earlier attempts.
Cool.
Very fond of, I'm trying to, oh god, I'm and of course now I'm just drawing a complete and utter blank. That's embarrassing.
Emma
Newman is a wonderful writer, worth reading. She's a British writer, Emma Newman. Video games, I'm trying Witcher 3. It's a little tricky. Mm-hmm. The combat. I play on a console and it's like, you know.
That's why I switched to PC.
Yeah, I think I may have to, because I'm sort of like, oh my God, I can't, you know. Anyway, I'm not sure I can recommend on that. TV, what would I say that's been overlooked? The Magicians. Ooh. Please check out The Magicians. It's finished a series. You can binge it for 5 episodes. It's amazing. And another show, again, that has concluded, but it's by Jonah Nolan, who's doing Westworld. It's one of the finest science fiction shows ever. It's called Person of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
It was on CBS for five years or 4.5 years. And don't be fooled. for 6 episodes, you'll think it's just a procedural, and then it turns into a science fiction show, and it gets more and more and more. It's all about AI.
Okay.
And about,
oh, I love it.
And about creating family, and it is fabulous. And it has some of the most powerful, interesting women characters you will see. Jonah is a treasure. He casts.
Wow, you're hitting on my buttons here.
Oh, you're gonna love it. And it's just, it's a, but like I said, don't be fooled. It, you're gonna think, because it was on CBS. And I asked Jonah at a dinner one night, I said, how did you ever get this past Les Moonves? And he said, I told them it was a procedural. I just lied. And but yeah, it's brilliant. Cool. And he deliberately casts women in their 30s and 40s. Women who have life
Thank
experience.
God.
Yeah. And so it's not all 20-year-olds, you know. And so it's a marvelous show. So I highly recommend that. And then, you know, there's just so much new right now too. I mean, you know, that you can't keep up with it all. I mean, so those are my recommendations.
Very cool.
And,
excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah. And eventually, I got back the rights to a lot of my book series and we're starting to get them back up. They're not, we're not there yet, but as soon as they are, people can follow my website or me on Twitter or Facebook, and I'll be announcing when things are available. So, because I just finished book 5 of the Big Space Opera.
Nice.
Which is the final book.
Please feel free to let everyone know where to find you, like online, you know, your usernames.
Yeah, okay, I'm M.M. Snodgrass on Twitter. On Facebook, I think I'm just Melinda Snodgrass. And I have a website, Melinda M. Snodgrass. So if you Google me, you'll find me. I do Instagram, but badly, because I'm a word person,
it's hard.
Not a picture person. I'm trying to remember to take pictures.
All right. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to ask you one last question.
Okay.
If you could be the head writer on any show, what show would you like? A show that already exists, a show that's based on your work, a show that doesn't exist yet, anything.
Well, your obviously, I'd love to be the showrunner on my own show.
On
Wild Cards, or on my, I've written a spec pilot that we were going to try to shoot this summer, except now who knows, which is based on my Edge books about the war between science and rationality and superstition and religion. So I'm hoping we can still.
Do you need a 30-year-old actress? Because I'm not for you.
Yes, actually.
Excellent.
If you need somebody to give you coffee, like I'm an all-star at this. I can do it for you.
We need all the people we can get to make this thing happen.
Excellent.
And then they're going to need content after the plague is over. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to sell it. But obviously that. And then if I could go to work on any show out there, you know, I would love to work on any of the Star Wars shows they're developing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, let me go to work on Star Trek, Star Wars.
That
would make me a very happy human. You know?
Thank you, Star Wars.
Yes, we're a Star Trek podcast, right, but we do love our sci-fi and our Star Wars.
Hell yes.
You can't love Star Trek and not like, and only love Star Trek. That's silly.
You can't. What? Yeah, and we shouldn't be. Yeah, we got to stop fighting. The fandom has got to stop
Star Trek
fighting.
Versus Star Wars thing.
I never understood that. Never understood it. I know.
Yeah. Stop, people. Stop.
Yeah. Fandoms, get along.
Yes.
Yes.
That's all for me. Do you guys have any more questions for me?
No, I'm good. Thank you so much.
And honored.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm gonna look you up for that coffee date in the future because
we will.
Sabrina, you better let me know. You know,
I'll
drive down. 6 hours is nothing.
Yeah, we don't have time to talk about it today, but I want to talk to you about the difference between AI in fiction and in nonfiction. So
okay, it's a coffee date with all and any who could make it. We'll have fun when we can finally get together again. You know?
That's gonna take like 2 hours.
That'd be amazing.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I had a great time. Thank you.
Okay.